Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Joe Brennan, and this is XBN, the Swappies Broadcast Network. This is XBN, the Swappies Broadcast Network on XBN. My guest tonight, Renegade Evolution. She needs no introduction. She is the henchwoman and the verbal ninja. And she was my colleague, my partner, and debating tag team last night.
Indeed, indeed. And we managed to make it through the whole night with no mayhem, too.
You know, there was no mayhem at all.
Yep. I think the scariest thing was probably my nails, or the weather, or possibly the sheep.
I think the sheep, being on the dirt road.
Yep. It can happen down there pretty easy. It's pretty easy to get lost down there and find sheep.
Well, we had Constance on the phone, and she was giving us directions, and that's when I figured we might have gone the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
There were signs that said no cars, the road had turned to dirt, and there were sheep.
Right, right, yeah. Generally not an academic institution there. Yeah.
That was my impression, too.
Well, you made it, though, so that's good.
Yes, yes. So, Ms. Evolution, what are your thoughts?
You know, I was really pleasantly surprised. I mean, after all of the drama and angst and wrangling throughout the week over the event itself, the actual event, I was really pleased with it. I was impressed with Carla. I was, you know, impressed with the moderators and the overall mellowness of the whole thing really impressed. I mean, it was so informal. And I think it's because everybody had been so expected to, you know, thought that it was going to end up being a steel cage match. And it wasn't at all because, you know, contrary to popular belief, everybody there was pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I think that was coming expecting the steel cage match, you know, left with a sense of disappointment. There just wasn't, you know, it didn't turn out to be an action movie. There were no violence. There was no threats. Matter of fact,
we needed Jack Bauer on the panel.
We needed
Jack Bauer. I'm a huge fan of 24 as well, so when you mentioned Jack Bauer, I had to laugh.
We need Jack Bauer, you know, and Stone Rock Steve Austin, whoever his name is.
What his name is, yeah. But no, I was really impressed, and I mean, I'll admit that when I first walked in, you know, I didn't know who was going to be there or what like that. And then the first person that Constance introduced me to was Carla, and you know, I had apprehension about the whole event as well. And I can say, you know, 0.5 seconds after I shook her hand, I was like, okay, this woman's all right in my book. I mean, we spent, you know, a good 15 minutes talking about skiing and traffic and stuff like, you know, normal people stuff, which I thought, in a way, was really important after all of the, you know, strife and build-up and drama going on.
You know, I had the advantage of being so late that, you know, of course, everybody was there and kind of glaring when we came in, like, where have you been?
Well, it's cool, because then you didn't have to sit up there and go through all the testing of the microphones and stuff like that. It was all ready to go when you got there.
Yes, I didn't have to. Well, I didn't get to meet the roadies, though, you know, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I caught a lot, and I'm kind of bad with names. So, you know, everybody was introduced to me a couple times, and I don't remember everybody's name, which is a shame because I, you know, blogged about it, and I wanted to mention all of the people who'd gone into organizing it, but I couldn't keep names and faces straight. So I'm afraid I failed on that one. They can comment and tell me what their names are if they want.
I failed on that, too.
Yeah. Oh, I should have written it down. I really should have, but I just kind of spaced it. So But it was, I had a good time. I mean, I wish you guys could have gone to dinner with us. That was funny. I mean, here we are, you know, my friend Deb and I are sitting there in this little college bar with all these people that, you know, they're college students and they're loud and they're having a good time. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm getting too old for this. But no, yeah, we had a good time.
That thought crossed my mind when I was scanning the audience. Except for Faubert or whatever, Faubert or however you pronounce his name, except for Faubert's henchman sitting up in the corner. You know,
was that the guy in the shirt?
Old
was that the guy in the shirt and the tie?
I think so. That was the...
I mean, he sort of did not fit in with the rest of the crowd, but, you know, who knows? Maybe he's a business student and a future pornographer.
You never know. It could be.
You never know.
You know, and in discussing Carla, you know, as soon as I walked in, even before we talked, I felt an empathetic sense.
She seems to be, she came across as nothing but a very nice lady. I mean, as did her partner. They were both very personable. I was really impressed. And like you mentioned in your writing today, it kind of, in a way, had to be rough for her. I mean, she's allied with a lot of the radical feminists that, you know, we've had some strife with, and kind of a last-minute deal, and she has to walk in, you know, with all of what's been said to, you know, talk with people that she's never spoken to before. And, I mean, I think that takes guts. I mean, it does take guts, especially when there's two of us and there's only one of her, because Faubert backed out.
You know, there was two of us. There was one of her. She probably had to have heard all of the, you know, the erroneous and very factually misrepresenting statements about violent potential and, you know, that somebody was going to be harmed and all of this. And not to mention that, but, you know, they gave all this message of, you know, how dangerous it was going to be for the other speakers, and they needed security, and then they left this poor woman alone.
Yeah, but she definitely held her own. I she didn't even strike me as even remotely intimidated. I mean, I think she was there to say her piece and be reasonable, and I think that's really awesome. So, you know, I'm glad
she
came.
I think so, too. She kept me on my toes.
Yep. I also figure maybe once I walked in the room and she saw that I'm all, like, you know, 5'2" and nothing, that, you know, maybe, you know, my reputation for being, you know, I don't know, an axe murderer is overblown.
Well, see, you've got the reputation for being an axe murderer, and I am perpetually the leader of the army of infiltrators and co-opters of feminism and the usual.
Yep.
So, you
yeah.
Know,
Well, I have to say I was really pleased that, you know, there's now two expatriates.
Yes.
I thought that, you know, that was kind of cool. That was news to me, so I thought it was cool.
Yes. I did the same thing as you.
You know what? We need a flag. We need a flag now. I'll have to sign one, and I'll put it up, you know, on my blog. And we need our own flag now that we're expatriates.
Maybe we get that one with the snake from the Revolutionary War that says, "Don't tread on me."
Don't tread on me. That one might be really good. We could incorporate that somehow. I love Eddie Izzard, and I'm always reminded of his skit, you know, "But you have a flag." I always thought that was great. So you can't have a country without one. Yeah.
We could use the flag of the Symbionese Liberation Army. I mean, they're all dead or in jail, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't want to get sued. There's been, you know, because I get threatened with that a lot, that I'm going to be sued for something. So I think we'll just have to come up with an original design. So, Lord knows, I could stand the amusement of sitting around and drawing a flag.
Now, see, I have no talent. I mean, anything I create looks like an airline logo, and that's it. That's my only artistic.
But, you know, there's probably a market for that. You know, because with the way the airlines are kind of falling apart and rebuilding and splitting off, they could be in need of logos.
Very quickly, you're right.
Yeah.
You know, very quickly. But, no, I was very impressed with the whole event, you know. I mean, everybody got their turn. We all respected the other person's turn, and when we agreed, we said that we agreed. We didn't, you know, posture. Nobody postured and pretended not to agree. you know, and when we didn't agree, it was cordial, it was respectful, there was no...
Right, you know, absolutely. And I honestly wish that we had had more time to... I mean, the stuff that we agreed on was pretty much, you know, okay, we all nodded in agreement. There was no question there. But I think some of the stuff where we were, you know, either slightly different views or methods as to way things could be done, or even stuff that we disagreed about, I wish we'd had more time to talk about it. I mean, there were so many potentially interesting conversations. I mean, we didn't get even all the way through the questions. And I was really impressed with, you know, everybody was on their A game, and it was interesting too that I liked that on some topics. I think for the most part it was a given that Carla was going to have probably very different views than you and I, but on a lot of stuff one of us was in the middle and the other one was on the other end. You know, I mean, it wasn't just like black and white, you and I versus her on everything. There were times where, you know, you were sort of in between her and my opinion, or I was sort of in between you and her opinion, and it was I thought that was really interesting because people have this whole mentality that, it's, you know, guilt on both sides, that our side has, you know, this ironclad view of everything, and the radical feminist side has this ironclad view of everything. And I think it was interesting to see that, you know, maybe in on the internet or in big groups, that's the way it is, but in smaller, you know, actual discussions, not really so. There's actually kind of middle ground, or, you know, very differing opinions, or, you know, levels to people's opinions. I thought that was really fascinating.
You know, I think that last night was a victory for moderates.
Right.
That.
Which frustrates the hell out of a lot of people, but.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Just checking out the blogosphere, it definitely seemed to do that. You know, and to me, it was what a debate is supposed to be. You know, I've always been a believer that if you go into a debate, the debate is for the audience, and you're there to present a perspective, to represent your views, to represent your perspective. It's not a personality contest. It's not about the speakers. It's about a presentation with the hopes that the audience will find what you have to say valid and
interesting, you know, that they feel that they've taken something away from it as opposed to just listening to people ramble for an hour.
That's exactly right, you know, and you know, I as you saw in my post, you know, I read some of the suggestions of one of the panelists that didn't show up, and they were just astonishing.
Right, right. I don't know. I feel like I thought, with, you know, considering everything that had gone on throughout the week, you know, prior to the event, that it was, really, considering all the strife that went on, it was really an amazing, it came off really amazingly. I was very impressed and very pleased. And, you know, if you watched the people who were watching, I mean, I wish we'd had a bigger crowd, but as you watched them, you know, they were either nodding or shaking their heads, or, you know, you could see that definitely opinions were being expressed that they had some feelings on, which I, you know, that's the point.
You know, I think the most important thing that came out of it was when the comment about President Bush was made about don't vote for Bush, and the whole audience cheered.
Yes, and we all nodded in agreement. I mean, that we absolutely positively agreed on that. And I mean, it was one of a few things that we did, but I did find that was amusing that, you know, despite all of the differences that anyone might have, that one definitely won over everybody.
You know, one of the things that kind of caught my attention was seeing the different methods that the three of us had, and you know, Carla wrote lots of notes, and Jessica Land from Swap East noticed that when I was talking about devastating cold of Steve Austin, or I said, what is he, Stone Cold?
Stone Cold Steve Austin, yeah.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. You know,
she was taking notes. I mean, I saw her write down, what was it, like the super power bomb or whatever it was you were saying. She was writing it down, and I was like, okay, that is cool that all these little bizarre expressions are being recorded.
you know, and the great irony is, like, I pulled it out of my you know, well, it's a family show.
Your behind.
My behind, yes. Yes.
Yes.
You know, and then I felt bad. You know, she probably spent an hour on Google after trying to look up something, and I never thought to tell her that, you know, I don't watch wrestling and I don't know what the moves are. And,
right. Well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe she has a friend or somebody that's a wrestling fan, and maybe she does know.
Well, I hope so, you know. You know, I talked with her briefly after, and you know, she expressed that it was difficult for her at the beginning, and that, you know, and that she felt, from the way I understood what she was presenting, that she felt, you know, very pleased herself that, you know, it didn't turn out to be this
the evil event. Setup. Yeah, the setup that was thought to be.
Exactly. You know, it there was no setup. You know, there was no conspiracy. You know,
mm-hmm.
And
it's just the way that things played out. And I mean, I was pleased that, you know, even if we're sitting there talking about subjects that are, you know, we all take very seriously. It's not like, I mean, we all grinned at one point. Everybody had a giggle at some point about something that anybody, you know, either someone in the audience or someone on the panel said. And I think sometimes when you're talking about stuff that serious, you have to interject a little bit of humor. And we all succeeded in that. And I'm quite pleased, because I think that everyone thought this was just going to be so grim and horrible and vicious, and it wasn't at all. So I was very pleased with that.
I'm anxious for the recording. I hope the recording ends up.
I emailed Constance about that today. She said that they're going to try to get it up, you know, tonight or tomorrow. So yeah, I really want everyone to hear it. I mean,
yeah, me too.
Between Jack Bauer and the similarities between yoga and certain sexual acts and porn and all kinds of crazy stuff.
It just, well, see, you know, part of the thing was, you know, that. Which, you know, people would tell me I shouldn't even admit this, but I felt like you and Carla both knew the topic so much better than I did.
Well, I think, though, the thing is, because it was a porn, I mean, the main thing was the porn thing, and, I mean, that's really not your thing. I mean, if it had been about, you know, definitely ways to do, you know, outreach or whatever, I think that you definitely would have been the one with the most knowledge. But, I mean, you said yourself that, you know, you haven't watched porn since the era when the performers had pubic hair, which slayed me. I could not stop laughing. And I think Carla found that rather amusing, too, in a kind of a horrifying way, is that, you know, the sex industry, it's that whole not a monolith thing. It's really big. So you can have people that are experts or, you know, very knowledgeable in various fields, but they're not going to know everything about everything. And, I mean, actually, when it was first suggested to me that they, you know, they wanted somebody who knew stuff about porn, but they were kind of leaning towards maybe somebody who knew more about feminist porn, I was like, oh, geez, that's really not my strong suit. I mean, I definitely have information, which I brought, but, you know, I don't make feminist porn. That's not my thing. But, you know, I was able to brush up on it. But yeah, I mean, you definitely, I mean, because so much of the conversation wasn't even just about the content or the way it's done, it's about the treatment of the people in it, and you're definitely on the same page as everybody else there. I mean, that's
exactly.
Pretty much universal throughout sex work. So I don't feel like, you know, I don't feel like you were outgunned as far as information goes, just, you know, the topic is not your specialty.
I just put it in, you know, 24 in Battlestar Galactica terms, and for everyone
mm-hmm.
who didn't know what a Cylon was, you know, that.
Yep. Well, I just thought it was so funny. I don't expect my boyfriend to be Jack Bauer. That perfectly sums it up, in that so many people who are on the anti side think that the people get the message. And I think, you know, to an extent they do. I've always said that I think porn is absolutely horrible sex education. And I know that there are pornographers that specifically try to make, educational sexual films. Tristan Taramino, you know, very famous for it, feminist pornographer. But it's not. I mean, the mainstream stuff or the stuff that is out there, I mean, the stuff that I make, I would be horrified at the idea of somebody using it, you know, solely as their sex education, because it's not really what it's intended for. But I still think that you have to put some faith in the majority of human beings that, what they see in a porn film. You know, I mean, I did the whole thing about how it's supposed to be a little raunchy and a little bad. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure for so many people because it's not what they expect or what they're going to do or, you know, I mean, it's not something that happens in their own bedroom every night. But that, there's so much about the, you know, porn gives people unrealistic impressions about what people's bodies should look like. And, of course, there is a big move, and not just in feminist porn, but in a lot of different, you know, non-mainstream types to be more inclusive of, you know, race and body type and things like that. But I honestly don't think that people who watch porn all expect all women to be, you know, 5'6" with 24-inch waists and double D chests and blonde, or, you know, these super studly guys with, you know, extremely large penises who can go at it for 90 minutes like a jackhammer. Sure, there are some people that are going to think that, but I don't think the majority comes away with that molded into their head is the way life and people and sex are supposed to be.
Well, you know, I think one of the, you know, porn gets this label that, you know, it's going to motivate people to do all these things, you know, and it's kind of like the point that I made in the debate. And speaking of debates, if you'd like to join in, you can join us at 646-231-36. I'm Jill Brenneman. My guest is Renegade Evolution. This is XBN, Swap East Broadcast Network. You know, I mean, porn is not sex education. It shouldn't be any more than 24. It is conflict management.
Right, education. Exactly. And I think part of the reason, and we did kind of touch on this briefly, and I think it's something that maybe we were all sort of in agreement with in the debate, is that when you look at, you know, media, just in general, you know, I can go online and spend 5 seconds, well, and so can any 10-year-old, you know. I can go online and spend 5 seconds and type in something and I can find porn. I can also go online and in 5 seconds, as could a 10-year-old, and type in something and find, you know, these horrific videos from Iraq of people being decapitated and dismembered bodies and all these kind of things. Our media in general is very extreme. And I think that it affects some people adversely. I do believe, you know, I agree with Carla when she says that people are influenced by society. I mean, I think we all are to some extent, but it's not, I think it's people who already have you know, pre-existing issues that are influenced to a point where they, you know, they become either violent or, you know, sexually predatory or whatever due to something or a group of things that they've seen. I think your average viewer can watch porn and not become a pedophile or a rapist or, you know, a sadist. And I think your average person can watch 24 and think that torturing people is bad. So I don't know. I mean, I do think we're influenced, but I don't think it's the extent that everyone says it is. And I think that porn really takes it in the chops for a couple of reasons in that, you know, I mean, the actors are doing what they're doing. You see on film, they're actually doing it. But it's, you know, it's naked and it's sex. It's not you know, adventure or drama or, you know, once people take their clothes off and sex is involved, it becomes a whole other ball of wax, I think, for a lot of people anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, I think if you look at the, you know, the whole concept of religion, I mean, probably more people have been tortured and died in this world as a result of religious views.
Oh, yeah, if you want to blame something for violence in the world, the first thing that you should get rid of is the Bible. And I think you said that last night, and it's true. And that's not to say that, you know, I would never want to take anybody's Bible. I think if people are religious and spiritual and being a Catholic or being a Presbyterian or a Jew or a Muslim or whatever makes them happy, and they can do so without being violent, then, you know, that's awesome. If it empowers them, go for it. But yeah, it's just, you know, more mayhem has been committed in the name of God than anything else.
You know, and no one, at least no one rational would say, you know, we're going to ban religion, we're going to ban Bibles because people do terrible things in the name of religion. You know, it's so... You know, I mean, terrible things can be done in the name of anything, you know. I mean, it just, you know, because there's sex involved in porn, because, you know, and usually the focus in porn goes back always to the woman, you know, and that seems to change the whole dynamic. And you know, it doesn't.
Well, we were discussing even last night just how so many people are so, I mean, sex is so taboo and we're not supposed to question or discover or explore, especially women. I think that definitely ties into it. I mean, we use sex in everything here, you know, advertising, music, blah, 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 but it's still just such a you know, a hands-off subject for so many people that, you know, porn, because it's all slick packaging, throwing our own repression back in our faces and, you know, making killing doing it, because guilt and sex, wow, what a winning combination to sell. And, yeah, so I think when there's sex involved, I think it's a whole different level for a lot of people, as opposed to, you know, a lot of the, you know, truly ridiculously sick and violent stuff you can see on primetime television on, you know, the major networks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I forget who made the point, but you watch Law and Order Special Victims Unit, and was it you that made the point about Law and Order SVU?
I like that show because I think there's interesting stories. But talk about, you know, bleak and depressing. I mean, if there was anything to really make me feel that, you know, men hated women just universally, it wouldn't be my job or pornography. It'd be, you know, Special Victims Unit.
Yeah, me too, you know. But that's considered mainstream. And, you know, just because they keep their clothes on. Essentially.
Yeah, and it kills me too, because everyone's like, well, you know, that's fictionalized TV. Half the time when Law and Order comes on, it says, you know, based on a true story. I mean, Law and Order is, you know, their notorious tagline is, you know, ripped from today's headlines. So, I mean, while it's a fictionalized version of something, these are events that have actually occurred in many cases. Yet, you know, you don't see public outcry to get Special Victims Unit, you know, off the air. And I've seen, you know, in fictionalized television, you know, from CSI to Law and Order, and then to, you know, some of the cable shows, like, say, The Sopranos or Oz or whatever, like on HBO, and I've watched all of them. I'm a big TV addict, I'll admit that, is that, you know, I can see a more brutal depiction of, you know, a man or a woman being beaten and raped and horribly, you know, abused than I've ever seen in porn, and I watch and make some pretty extreme stuff. You know, but everyone is consentingly there and is portrayed as being there consentingly.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, going back to the Battlestar Galactic analogy, I remember a very graphic rape scene, you know, where a female prisoner of war was raped, and it was graphic, and there was another graphic depiction of another female prisoner of war, played by actress Tricia Helfer, which it showed the impact of, you know, the brutality of torture and of sexual torture, you know, and in a war context. And nobody thought that Tricia Helfer was not agreeing to the role. And the other thing that struck me was that the other scene, which involved the rape of a female prisoner, it was the actress Grace Park who pushed the envelope and wanted it to go farther. She wanted the scene to be taken farther, and that they had to cut a lot to make the network censors, because she wanted to make a point.
Right.
And so, you know, she wanted to make a point against, you know, torture of prisoners and rape and war, et cetera. And yet, no one would ever, for some reason,
let her do it. Yeah,
but people believe her that she said. People believe her that she said, "I wanted to do it," and they cut it. But yet, if you say, you know, if someone talks to you and you say, "I want to film this,"
it's my idea. Oh, yeah, I mean, I get that a lot, because I mean, and once I do other, you know, I mean, pornography actresses that I actually enjoy watching, because I'm a viewer, as much as I, you know, I watch a lot of porn, is that, I mean, I enjoy watching the people that repeatedly, the women in there say, you know, this was my idea, I enjoy what I do, and it's not, you know, the sweet romantic, you know, couples or feminist porn that I watch. because, I mean, I know for myself the way that I'm wired, you know, what I like, you know, in my own personal sex life as well as what I do in work, it's not what most people want to do, and that's fine. You know, I'm not forcing anybody to do it. But, you know, when a lot of the, I don't know if I can say a lot, but some of the feminist porn, it doesn't appeal to, I mean, I find it interesting, and I think it's awesome that it's being made, and I absolutely positively respect the women who are doing it, because they're putting their desires and their views on the way porn should be out there, and I think that's great, but it doesn't necessarily turn me on. And I think that to say that, you know, this is what women want sexually, period, is, I think it's a bit dangerous, and it can lead to a lot of problems. I mean, I myself am not particularly into BDSM, but I have a lot of friends who are, and, you know, their female dominants are constantly taking, oh, this isn't really your own sexuality, this isn't what you want, you've been brainwashed to think that you want to do this. And it's kind of like, no, it's not. You know, when I first started, you know, discovering my own sexuality, before I even knew what BDSM was, you know, I had these thoughts or these fantasies, and I feel the sort of same way about my own sexuality, and I think most women do. So to say that, you know, this is the way it should be, and that, you know, a woman shouldn't enjoy this or shouldn't do that or shouldn't, you know, say when, you know, if she's an actress in a porn film, that this is what I want to do and I enjoy doing it, to say that she's, you know, full of bull excrement on that is really, I don't like it at all. I find it kind of, I mean, I find that intimidating and silencing and dismissive.
646-200-3136, that's the number to call. You can join in, ask questions. There's lots of topics that we can talk about, including bull excrement. I have to admit, that term impressed me. Once again, 646-200-3136. This is XBN. My guest is Renegade Evolution. You know, I think one of the things that we talked about yesterday was that we're talking on a consensual basis. You know, I mean, we're talking about adults consenting, you know, adult women, adult men consenting. And you know, somehow there's a view where, you know, if you make porn, if you watch porn, you know, that you support non-consensual forced participation, and then, I mean, that's horrifying to me, you know.
I absolutely think it is. In fact, I think, I don't know, in a way, I feel like because there are absolutely, I mean, we talked about it yesterday, and that there are absolutely people that, you know, would prefer not to be involved in any part of the sex industry, you know, poverty, you know, doesn't lead to choice. And so there are people definitely in various forms of the sex industry who don't want to be there. If they had other choices, that they would take them. But if you're going to respect that, you know, that's going to be their choice, that they want to leave and you want to help them, the people who want to stay, you know, you kind of have to look that, you know, they have their reasons and their choices as well. And because of the kind of stuff that I like or that I do, I'm very much on knowing that whoever I'm doing whatever with is okay with that. I mean, you when a man says that, people are like, oh, great, I love to hear that. When a woman says it, it's not to be expected, because it's that whole, you know, well, you know, the way that sex works is, you know, women aren't put in the position where they're the ones that have to make that call. And I could say, you know, at my house, if I'm watching a porn movie with my significant other, he is not the one that says, hey, can we try that? It's usually me. But I'm very big on people only doing what they're comfortable with, saying what they want to do and what they don't want to do. And if somebody says, I don't want to do something, it needs to be respected. And I really take that into consideration in anything that I do. And, I mean, I think if more people did that, then I, you know, it's like, I don't care what kind of sex you're having as long as that's sort of your outlook on it.
You know, it's ironic that we've ended up in the places that we have in life. You know, I remember growing up where, you know, the very little sex education that I got growing up in Catholic school was, you know, that women didn't want it at all. And, you know,
right.
And it was missionary position, and you said the rosary the whole time, and you sure as hell didn't enjoy it. You know?
Right, right.
and, you know, that yet, you know, I specifically remember my father showing my younger brother a porn magazine because he was afraid my brother was gay, and he felt that giving him a porn magazine would make him straight, which it turned out, you know, my brother was straight anyway, but, but you know, and it's one of those messages that society taught, you know, I, growing up as a girl, I was taught no sex, no, you know, you don't want it, you know, sin, you know, and my brother was given a porn magazine to
told out to go out there and get the girl, right? And I think that's a double, it's a double standard message that regardless of you know, your religious background, there's definitely that, you know, men are, it's okay for them to pursue and have sex, and women, not the case.
Exactly, and you know, God forbid that you as a woman say that you want to watch porn, that you want to produce porn, you want to be in porn. I mean, it's...
Well, people just can't fathom it. They just cannot fathom why a woman would want to do that. And it's one of the things that, you know, has me slamming my head up against the wall so often is that, you know, oh, you must be messed up. Now, does anybody ask a male porn performer why he's in porn? Never. It's never asked of him why he would want to be in that. It's assumed, oh, hey, cool, he gets to have as much sex as he wants and he gets paid for it. You know, but if a woman does it, it's suddenly like, oh, you know, she must have this tragically flawed history and be screwed up and have all of these horrible things happen to her. And that the double standard there, when we're trying to get rid, I mean, especially, you know, with feminists, you're trying to get rid of the, you know, the stud slut dichotomy. When you have those sorts of attitudes and you throw out those kinds of opinions or assumptions, it's not doing anyone any favors, and it really ticks me off. And I mean, I'll be the first one to admit that I don't view sex the same way a lot of other people do. But, you know, I don't judge them for the way they view it. And I would, you know, like to be not judged for the way that I view it. I think it's a reasonable request.
And that's how it should be, you know. It's about respect. And, you know, how the neighbors do it. You know, I've had this discussion with people plenty of times. You know, they're all upset because, you know, two gay men moved in the next apartment or something, and it's like, who cares?
Right.
You know?
Right. It's like they're going to turn the whole neighborhood gay or something, right? You know, the radioactive chickens gave me gay. I mean, it's just, it's bizarre to me. It makes no sense.
You know, I remember, you know, a woman talking that she was going to have to move because she had children, and two gay men had moved in next door, you know, and it was like,
she needs to be more worried about the priest or the gym teacher, you know, than the two gay men living next door. And, it's definitely, you know, in my neighborhood where I live, nobody knows what I do for a living because it's not worth the, at least I don't think they do. I don't know. They might have me on their internet cache. I don't know. But nobody's ever said anything, and I just assume keep it that way, you know, because putting up with other people's, you know, garbage about it is just not worth it.
Well, I think in your benefit, you know, the pictures that, and I have never seen any pornographic pictures of you, but the pictures of you that I've seen on the internet, just those, you look very different than, you know, I have a confession to make. You know, when you walked in and we started talking, I was thinking to myself, I don't have a clue who this is.
Yep, exactly. When I am just, you know, out doing civilian life, I don't look like a porn chick, you know? Who wants to wear 7-inch heels all the time, you know? I've always said that, you know, when I'm hanging out, I'm kind of a jeans and t-shirt kind of gal. I don't wear, you know, a ton of makeup when I'm not working. I don't do anything really crazy with my hair. I dress pretty casually because I'm comfortable that way. I mean, I really am. I mean, I have a thing on, I'm addicted to the video game Guitar Hero, a thing on my blog of me playing it, and I mean, it's the one thing that if I was wandering around Mitch Fest, right, in that outfit, no one would have any idea. I blend right in, you know, it's the jeans and the tank top and the baseball hat. That's kind of what I live in. when I'm not working, because I mean, I have to dress up for work all the time. And so when I'm not working, or when I, you know, I'm not going out or doing something, you know, job related or stuff like that, I tend to be much more casual. And when yesterday I wanted to, because of a whole lot of the controversy, I didn't want to, I wanted to be casual. I didn't want to come in, you know, looking as intimidating as everybody seems to think I look. Because, yeah, in some of my blog pictures, I do look intimidating. I mean, if you don't know, I'm only 5'2". I could look kind of scary. But it's just, yeah, I'm much more comfortable in jeans and a T-shirt most of the time.
You know, that was the same basis for my attorney look, you know. It was like, I don't like to dress up. It's not something that I tend to do. I live in jeans and a T-shirt, too. And, you know, and I deliberately dressed the part. You know, I wanted no questions coming, you know, that, you know, well, she's unprofessional or, you know, or whatever.
Right. Well, and I think there's a huge tendency for sex workers in general. It doesn't matter what aspect of the industry that you're in, that you're viewed as your job and not as a person. And I think that, you know, if I had shown up like I was going someplace work-related in the big heels and a miniskirt with, you know, a ton of makeup on, it would be hard. And it's unfortunate, but it would have been harder to take me seriously or take me as a person. So it's like, I'm just going to wear what I'd wear every day. Like, if I was going to go shoot pool with my friends, that's what I would have been wearing, you know? So, because, you know, I'm not just my job. I'm an entire entity. And I think when I'm dressed for work, it's hard for people to see that.
You know, I used to find that as a flight attendant, that it would go both ways. Like, people always saw me in uniform, you know, and they'd see me in jeans, and they were shocked.
Right.
You know, I wasn't wearing a scarf. Well, I really don't like polyester wool blend and you know, acrylic scarves in July.
And pantyhose and heels, yeah.
And pantyhose and heels, yeah, you know, and you know, 4 inches of makeup and, you know, 3-inch heels and, you know, and I really don't even need the heels.
Right. I was very surprised by, like, how tall you were yesterday. I mean, I'm short, so I really notice when people are that much taller than I am. And I even had, I mean, I had heels on, but they were little ones. I was like, wow, Jill is really tall.
You know, I'm actually not as tall as people think. I'm like 5'9 and 3/8.
Maybe because you're thin, you look taller. Who knows?
Well, that and I had heels and the boots, and that was actually deliberate to so that I didn't look threatening. You know, it's like, okay, how am I going to beat somebody up or get into a fight, you know, in 3-inch heels, you know,
right.
and dress up as an attorney. You know?
Right, right. Hard to fight in a suit.
To fight in a suit and heels, you know. And besides, just for the simple fact that I wouldn't want to put a damn run in my stockings and have to buy another pair.
Right.
I'm not going to get into a fight, you know, dressed like that.
Exactly. Well, see, that's my theory. I mean, I think the scariest thing about me yesterday was my nails, and there was no way I was going to risk breaking them because I just got them done. And that's expensive.
Exactly.
You know, but no, I was pleased that there was, you know, no real even mention of that for the most part yesterday at all during the whole event. But I actually, before, because I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, the only thing that I'm really still kind of ticked off about with this whole thing is the backlash against Constance and her associates.
Me too. That's what touched off my rant on your blog and my rant on Bound Not Gagged, and Constance did nothing wrong. Constance bent over backwards to be
nice and accommodating. And it's just, I think that so many people forget that this isn't, you know, this wasn't organized by any sort of industry. This is a bunch of college, you know, kids trying to get a grade and trying to do something, you know, different and get some controversial issues out there and introduce people both to, you know, sex workers' rights and feminism and radical feminism and, you know, let them have, you know, some opinions on porn. I mean, this is not what they do professionally. And the fact that, you know, some folks are really expecting them to be at the caliber of, you know, say, a PhD-tenured professor who is setting up an event kind of, it really irks me. I mean, nobody does anything perfect. Organizing a conference for anything is not easy. And this was, you know, I hate that she's, you can say whatever the heck you want about me. I'm past caring at this point. I mean, I find it ironic or whatever, but to take it out on these young women is really, really, that's what has ticked me off the most at this point.
Me too. You know, it was completely unfair. And, you know, and just to give an example, of how significant the, you know, there is this whole thing about safety and security and et cetera. And then I find that, you know, what astonished me is I found that it went even farther, that the demands were even more, the expectations were even more ludicrous, you know, that what Constance is being chastised for, and, you know, I'm trying to pull this up, you know, as we speak, and this is literally a comment from one of the guests who didn't show up. As soon as I pull this up, and of course now I can't pull it up, but when, you know, there was a snide comment about Amanda Brooks not showing up, Amanda Brooks was not a no-show. Amanda Brooks, there was no funding.
There was funding for her. They couldn't afford to fly her out, and, you know, and it's a shame because I think it would have been great if Amanda could have been there. You know, maybe another time she could come. And I just, you know, and I kind of feel bad for Constance because she really got blindsided. I mean, she did not, despite what anybody says, she did not know the full history of all of the drama that's occurred between all of these people. And, I mean, when she asked me, I think what part of the selling point was, well, holy crap, you know, can I say that? Well, anyway, you're a female and you're a pornographer, you know, ooh, score. And not knowing that there was going to be all of this backlash. I mean, I know they had a bake sale to get us gas money. You know, it's not, they hadn't received a whole ton of funding. They couldn't offer us hotel rooms or great speaking fees or to pay for people's travel. And, you know, I don't think as college students, you know, some of them, you know, freshmen and sophomores, that they should be expected to have to do that, or they should be chastised so heavily for not going off, you know, being able to cater to everybody's demands. And I don't know, it bothers me. And what also kind of, I mean, I find this, I don't know, I think I would find it creepy. And, you know, as much as I get called creepy, I certainly know creepy when I see it, apparently, is that the professor that pulled out, you know, she's in the university where he teaches and has all this clout, as are, you know, the women that were working with her. And for him to behave that way towards a student, you know, in his university, I don't know. It's like, who's the student here? Who's the teacher?
I mean,
the adult.
I finally pulled it up just to give the audience two examples of demands that were made and suggested. One of the presenters who didn't show writes that, and this is a direct quote, that one of the presenters that failed the show wrote, if they had told me Amanda, meaning Amanda Brooks, couldn't make it, I would have suggested that pornographers and strip club owners are easy to find through legal channels, so they could have been asked to appear on the panel. That was one discussion point, or one, essentially a demand. And second, this same speaker that pulled out, the second suggestion / demand was, I would have suggested that the number of porn-using men on campus should have been able to produce just one pornsturbator willing to defend his porn consumption.
Right. And, you know, if I'm average Joe, college dude who watches porn, and, gee, they want one random pornsturbator to come onto a panel with, you know, a radical feminist and a professor at the very college that I attend and a sex workers' rights advocate, yeah, sign me up for that. You know, go ahead and put a bullet in the back of my head first. I mean, talk about leading, you know, the proverbial sheep from down the dirt road to the slaughter. And, I mean, as for the, you know, the pornographer and the strip club owner, well, gee, I happen to be a pornographer and I happen to be a stripper, and I'm willing to work for, you know, I got paid gas money. I mean, if you're going to try and get, you know, Belladonna or John Stagliano or, you know, some big name, huge, you know, porn empire person to come out, they don't have the funds for that. And quite frankly, you know, I mean, people who do a lot of the California mainstream porn, they are working all the time. But I did find, actually, are you familiar at all with who Ernest Green is?
Vaguely, yes.
Okay, well, he's Nina Hartley's partner.
Yes.
You know, and also a pornographer who, you know, has been called a few choice names here and there. He just, you know, commented on my blog that next time that there's this sort of a debate, he would love to be there and thinks that Nina would probably come too and that they would pay for it. So perhaps if Constance can do another one, Ernest Green and Nina Hartley could be there. Do you think that would be satisfactory?
Could you get a porn debater?
I could ask Mr. E to go, but I don't think he'd do it. You know, I undoubtedly could find a guy who wanks off to porn who would be willing to go. Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to say wank anymore because it's threatening abusive rapist language.
Yes.
I could find a guy who pleasures himself while watching dirty movies. How's that?
Yes. However, it's okay to refer to women as well, on Battlestar Galactica, to go back to that, they use the word frack.
Mm-hmm.
And frack is acceptable on network TV, you know, and they say like mother fracker and frack you and
mm-hmm.
So, you know, to call women frack stations, you know, since we're staying in compliance, you know,
I have to edit out one, but yeah, I mean, I'm horrible for whatever to, you know, for my laughing like a supervillain comment and the word wank, but you know, I can be turned around and called a hot bisexy willing to, let's see, orally pleasure and fornicate with anyone for money kind of comments. And, you know, those aren't abusive or degrading or misogynistic at all, those types of comments. Not in the least, apparently.
You know, and comments that, you know, I got from a woman named Nikki Kraft was in my delusions of grandeur. And then she listed out, you know, experiences that I had gone through in non-consensual.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's apparent to me that, you know, I this go around. I mean, I know that I'm the juicier target this time, it seems, because I got the impression that no one was you know actually afraid that you were going to physically hurt them, but is, you know, we're psychopathic or sociopathic or narcissistic or, you know, pathological liars or whatever. And I don't know about you. I'm pretty sure it's probably the same with you. Anything I've ever said or anything that's been said to me, it is documented. I can back it up. You know, I have the proof.
Yep.
I know where all the bodies are buried kind of thing. And for someone to turn around and call me, you know, mentally unstable or, you know, a narcissist and anybody who happens to speak to me in a non, you know, condescending or you know, agrees with me about anything, you know, my psychophants or whatever, that to me is, I mean, talk about degrading and dehumanizing. And that's part of, I mean, my whole problem all along with so much of this has been, you know, the double standards in language and that some women are more equal than others and we can listen to, you know, certain sex workers, but we can't listen to other ones. And or we can sit there and talk about them, but God forbid if somebody who doesn't have our agenda in line wants to be there and speak about it. You know, I mean, that's kind of what really, I mean, the post that I wrote that Sam quoted heavily from in her explanation as to why she didn't go was, I mean, yes, it was very sarcastic, and which is me. And I know that sarcasm doesn't always travel well over the Internet. You don't know. I mean, people who know me know I'm sarcastic, but if you've never met me, I could understand where people would take it the wrong way. But the very serious post where it was, you know, where I used the word wink and stuff like that, it was, I mean, for me, because the opportunity was so important to me because in all of these other events, we see sex workers being talked about and discussed and, you know, having life-changing decisions supposedly made on our behalf, and none of us are there. And so, I mean, to me, this is a great opportunity to be so, you know, I can be like, hey, I'm a sex worker. This is what I think, you know, and people, of course, have taken it out of, well, I don't know, the spirit that I intended it in was that I was really, you know, I have dreamt of an opportunity to do this because it's important to me to have it that, you know, a sex worker who you know, has a stance different than what they'd like everyone to think has, gets to stand up and say something. And of course, that was completely missed or completely ignored. And, you know, now I'm a creepy sadist, apparently. I don't know.
Sadist? I mean, if anything, one of your offers to appease them would have made both you and I...
Then we would have been guilty of making bondage porn. Because, yeah, the straight jacket and leg irons, especially if you were in a black suit. Yes,
yeah.
If you had shown up in the black suit and I had been in a straitjacket and leg irons, it would have been construed as, you know, we were making bondage porn at William and Mary. Why am I laughing about that now? Not like it probably hasn't happened before, but
there's no question if you were in a straitjacket and leg irons, they were gonna need to, because I'm just gonna say straight out. I mean, what was done to Carla was terrible. You know, to me, you don't abandon an ally.
Right.
And, you know, and granted, you know, the whole straitjacket and leg irons thing was never...
Actually, I was completely serious. I was dead serious about if that's what it took to get this thing to go off with the original panel, I would have done it. I mean, if I'm terrifying, I could be the whole Hannibal Lecter, you know, get up, I was ready to do it. But,
you know, if you were going to do it, I was going to do it. And, you know, I guess one of the things that immediately struck me that gave me a sense of empathy for Carla was that if it was in reverse and you were facing a hostile crowd or you know, what was projected to be, you know, a dangerous panel and a dangerous crowd, not only would I not back out, I would be... damn sure that I was there with you.
Right. And see, the thing what a lot of people are trying to forget and gloss over is that had the other participants, the non-originally, I mean, the ones that dropped out and Carla had to replace, they're absolutely, I mean, there is a history of hostility there. And there is, you know, I've been, if not directly threatened by certain individuals involved, I have been threatened by their allies. With, you know, something more than just a bizarre off-the-cuff, you know, I'm enraged statement. I mean, literally actual threats that, you know, are, you know, serious, you know, lawsuits and outing and things like that. And, you know, I still went. And one of the first things Constance asked me, she's like, are you comfortable here? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine, you know. But to act like that we're the big, horrible, threatening ones and other people have done no wrong, it's propaganda and it's a big spin and it distracts from, you know, pointing out my or your, you know, bad actions, bad words, bad deeds, or the fact that, you know, I use aggressive language in my writing, which is true. I do. I swear a lot, you know, I just do. It makes it easier to, distract from other people's own bad behavior. And, none of them are willing to admit that there has been bad behavior all around. I mean, I'll admit that I've done some, said some nasty things and, you know, been abrasive and aggressive, but no one else from, you know, the group of supporters of one of those individuals is willing to do the same. And that says so much to me, you know?
Me too. You know, I, when I spoke at the University of Virginia and with only 46 seconds left, you know, and I had a credible death threat that the police, the Charlottesville police, took it upon themselves to protect me, that they were able to trace back to a radical feminist, you know, and I still showed up and did the gig, but that's judged as you know, of course, that was in my head, or I wrote it to myself. Like, the police wouldn't have, you know, traced it back to me if I had emailed them a death threat.
Right. Well, I mean, I know we don't have a lot of time left, but there's somebody that, like, comments on my blog that I don't always agree with. But he said, in a real quick version of it is, if you are constantly guilty of being oppressed, that it frees you to do just about anything, because you can blame it on somebody else and you can blame it on your oppression. And if we're viewed as the oppressors and they're viewed as the victims, of course they're going to excuse it.
And anything becomes excusable. I wish we had more time, Ren.
Well, we need to try and get Constance on a show. Maybe after, you know, a week after everything is settled down and she's done with her exams, we can get her on.
We for sure. You know, I would love to get Constance on a show and be able to get her take on the whole scenario and get her an opportunity to speak and for the truth to get out. And
okay.
We are out of time. My guest tonight has been Renegade Evolution. Ren, where can people find you?
They can find me at renegadeevolution@blogspot.com. But thank you, and I had a good time.
I did too. I always do. And we always get great numbers. I'll tell you, we always get great ratings when you're on. You are a ratings driver.
Oh, well, thank you.
My name is Jill Brenneman. This is XBN. Tomorrow evening's guest is Marco Passion. That will be at 10:30 Eastern Time on XBN. This is XXBN, Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill. The service is Swap East Media, powered by Blog Talk Radio. Swap East is SWOPEAST.org. This is XBN. Thank you.